This is John J. York, Eric from the 80s TV show Werewolf the Series, and you're listening to the DETV Podcast.
Welcome to the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast dedicated to any and all TV shows in the sci-fi, horror, fantasy, comic book genre. I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
And we are returning to the podcast after a bit of a hiatus. Mr. Seneca was setting up a bunch of scary, weird Halloween stuff. What were you setting up, Mr. Seneca?
Well, every year from about mid-July or early July through just before October starts, we design and produce sculptures for the, you know, Halloween holiday season. And so the major restaurants and bars that we do regularly each year are the Uptown Beer Garden. It's in Center City, Philadelphia, and Nightmare Before Tinsel, which is the Christmas bar Tinsel, but they open it for Halloween, so they call it Nightmare Before Tinsel.
Okay.
And we have some amazing sculptures in both places. Uptown Beer Garden has our sculptures everywhere. Our Stranger Things installation things are there, the Demodogs, the Demogorgons. I've got a giant chicken that's there, a giant monster chicken, musical skeletons. Like, it is amazing. Plus, this year we have brought our 14-foot Godzilla that we had previously at the Mahoning Drive-In. It is on holiday at the Uptown Beer Garden for the Halloween season. And hopefully it will be there for Christmas, too, because I want to make a giant Santa hat for him. And then the Nightmare Before Tinsel, Jason has made a large sculpture of a giant bursting through the walls on the second floor. Definitely go see it. Get some selfies with it. I have done a Hall of Illusions, optical illusion entryway, and a catacomb back bar with corpse videos that are kind of playing, that give that kind of eerie sense about it. The entire place is amazing. The drinks are expensive, but it's well worth it. Come and take a look if you're in Philadelphia, Center City, Nightmare Before Tinsel, and the Uptown Beer Garden.
Excellent. Excellent. How long does it...
see a lot of what we've made on my Instagram at Elegantly Kinky. So wrap that up there.
How long is the display up for?
Until the end of Halloween. So possibly we'll stay there for the rest of Halloween weekend, since Halloween is on a Friday this year. But not sure. Usually they have it down by November 1st or 2nd.
Yeah, I think a lot of places are doing like an extended Halloween through the weekend, because Halloween is on a Friday this year. Next year it'll be on Saturday, so that's going to be even crazier.
So crazy. Party hard on those weekends.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, I definitely think it's going to be a extended through the weekend Halloween extravaganza, especially like in Salem and stuff.
Oh, wow. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just curious. I'm wondering if it will die down in Salem on Saturday, because that's not Halloween anymore. You know what I mean?
But it is Day of the Dead, so it's still very, you know, in the holiday spirit.
I wonder how many places are going to be celebrating Day of the Dead with the current political climate happening. Because I know a lot of places around here have canceled multiple Hispanic Latino celebrations because they don't want
community protection. Yes.
Yes, because they know ICE will just show up and gather up as many people as they can, which is like, whether you believe in what they're doing or not is right or not, that's not here nor there. What will happen is violence will happen, bad things will happen, riots will break out, fighting will break out, people will get hurt and killed on both sides, whether they are right or wrong. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anything's really possible. I'm hoping that there is strength in community and that whatever Day of the Dead celebrations there are will be joyful and without interference. That is my hope.
Right. If there is some kind of authoritarian figure that shows up, don't get into a fight with it, because it's not going to end well at all.
Yeah.
they're not going to care about being on the news about it, and they're going to be packing weapons. So it's just a word of advice to don't.
It's a weird time that we're living in.
Yeah, basically. Somebody recently showed up at a place I work at. They needed to be carded, and their ID, they didn't have their driver's license. They had their visa, and their visa was expired.
Oh.
And I silently told them, you really want to get that taken care of as ASAP. Because you're in my city, and there is definitely been ICE in this city. And they're like, oh, well, I haven't had a problem before. And I'm like, it's a completely different climate. And also, you might want to get an updated ID when you're buying alcohol, too. Let's just keep the politics aside. We cannot serve you alcohol if you do not have an up-to-date ID.
Yeah.
So, let alone getting pulled over with an expired driver's license as well.
Yeah.
So what episode are we reviewing tonight?
We are doing Angels and Demons and Hunters. And so this is season one, episode 9 or 10, depending on what your list is on.
Yeah.
Angels and Demons. Originally aired Wednesday, August 23rd, 2006. Marcus seeks Krista's love and sympathy by showing her how he was turned into a vampire. I do find it odd that both this episode and the next episode both start off in nightclubs.
Yes. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
It definitely...
It's just odd, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like the movie, you know, started off in a nightclub.
True. So in this episode, Chris is kind of drinking away her feelings. You know, her mother just, you know, got turned into a vampire, and that didn't go very well because, you know, it would never go well. And so she's trying to drink away her feelings and hallucinates all her dead relatives. I wonder if this is a new condition for her or if it's just for this episode.
I think it's just for this episode, but I mean, there's a whole detox episode with her coming up too.
Yeah. The guy that she is drinking there, and this guy offers to pay for her drinks, and he's kind of a sleazebag, and his name is Lance, and turns out, yep, he is a sleazebag. He's a sleazebag rapist. And
yikes.
So, yeah, Krista really takes care of him very well and throws him onto a razor wire fence. So, saving a girl in the process.
As we should do with all rapists.
Yeah, if you had that type of super strength, save everyone from that fate.
Do you think if this show was written today, and we should have asked Neil this, for anyone not familiar, we're going to have the actor who plays Marcus on the show coming up at the end of the show. We might have one other person, but I can't say because that episode's not recorded. But we have recorded Neil's, and that's in the can. But do you think if this was made today, they would have written Marcus as bisexual and he would have fucked both brother and sister at some point? Like, he would have had a relationship with not only Chase, but also Kristen's brother, Zach, and then, obviously, him and Kristen hook up, too.
I don't think that Zach would have gotten that far with him, but I do think that they would probably have made him a bisexual.
I mean, it
causes a lot of absolute drama to unfold, and it's a lot of plot points that you can actually write in different ways using that device. So, yeah, they probably would have made him bisexual.
What do you think of Marcus's backstory? Have you ever seen the TV series Being Human? Either the British or American version?
No, I haven't seen that.
Okay. This kind of reminds me of that with the vampire in that show. I don't remember who played the vampire in the British show, but in the American show, it was Sam Witwer. You might know him as the voice and body of Darth Maul through most of the recent Star Wars stuff.
Okay. All right.
He was also on Supergirl. He was on Smallville. You look him up, you've either run into him at a convention, possibly, or you've seen him, his body of work.
Okay. All right. Cool. The backstory that Marcus has about him being in love with a woman and that woman being killed by this old vampire Dominique and raped during the killing in order to force him, Marcus, a new shopkeeper, into paying protection money and paying homage to him. And Dominic doesn't really understand what he's doing or have any care in the world for who Marcus is. He basically tortures the guy, nails him into a coffin, and then gives him to the Native American vampires. And these are kind of odd daywalking vampires because this was done in the daylight, it seemed. It didn't seem like they were trying to make it look like it was at night that they were doing this, but yeah, he was strung up and eaten, drained of blood by the Native American vampire clan. And I don't know why it happened that way, but I find it was interesting. But I would have thought that the killing of Dominic later in the episode would have been more engaging had Dominic been the one to actually transform Marcus. Because then it would show that Marcus had a bit of subservience to Dominic all of these centuries. I think that would have been more powerful. I don't think that they're going to get more into the thoughts and feelings and memories that he got from during his transformation, because that's what he would have gotten from the Native American vampires. I don't think they're going to show any of that, but I thought it was interesting. What did you think about it?
I don't remember seeing a lot of Native American vampires in a lot of different things, so this was different. The entire setting is this whole, like, you know, Victorian era, gothic, like, poor put upon boy seeking his revenge on his enemies once he gets power kind of plotline.
Mm-hmm.
To get Kristen to sympathize with him, because it's insanely tragic. The entire thing is just like, you know, what he had to crawl up from to get his revenge and become who he is. And in some ways he is still doing that because obviously he's at the heel of the little girl vampire. But it's definitely sadder than, let's say, like Louis' story in, you know, Interview with the Vampire.
Absolutely. You know, Marcus had everything going for him. The only thing that they didn't have in the plot line was a baby on the way. You know, that was perhaps the saddest thing that they could have added to that storyline here. But no, yeah, I think this was much sadder than Louis.
What did you think of the bloody fight that Marcus has in the episode as well?
I liked it. I think it had pretty good choreography, some nice effects, and him killing Dominic at the end was done very well. Dominic saying that, you know, he's done that to hundreds of women, you know, hundreds of men like you. He doesn't even remember Marcus. That's kind of telling, because having them be in the same kind of wing of the vampire hierarchy, I would have thought that would have come up much earlier. So interesting the way it was actually written out.
Do you like the fact that Kristen just gives herself over to Marcus just like that because she feels sympathy for him? It's not the turn I liked on this ever. And of course, you know, the next episode is her getting detoxed by Blake because he's watching the whole thing like a voyeur. By the way, I don't know if you saw in the news, what did Blake just show up in recently?
Marvel Rivals?
True. Yeah, he's in the video game. That was about a month ago.
Okay.
Angela is the new character in Marvel Rivals. Do you know who Angela is? We've talked about her.
Yes, but they changed her entry canon for that.
Correct,
so,
because she was in the Spawn universe. Yeah, now
let's sidetrack on Angela.
Spawn Angela versus Thor Angela. Blade is Blade Knight, as in the Fist of Khonshu.
Huh. I had not heard.
Yes, he is in all four episodes of Marvel Zombies as Blade Knight. The Fist of Khonshu, a.k.a. Moon Knight. He's basically being inhabited by the spirit of Khonshu, who inhabits Mark Spector in the Moon Knight show.
Wow. Okay.
Which is funny, because on this show, do you remember Blade mentioning Mark? When someone mentions, do you also fight werewolves? He goes, no, that's Mark Spector. Or he says, that's my buddy Mark.
Oh, okay. Maybe I missed that.
Yeah, that was on this show. I always thought that was really kind of like a like wink and a nod. Because if you saw the Blade 3 movie, Blade Trinity, in the post-credits scene, Hannibal King and Whistler's daughter hunt a werewolf.
Okay.
And Mark Spector, the Moon Knight, first appeared in Werewolf by Night from Marvel Comics.
Huh. All right.
Yeah. But it was great to actually get Blade in the MCU in some way after all of the bullcrap with Mahershala Ali. Now, he's played by a guy named Todd Williams in this. I don't know who that is. But it's not Mahershala Ali is the voice of Blade. But he does a good job impersonating Mahershala.
Okay.
Yeah. He even has a guy throw himself at him when they're inside Baron Zemo's underwater lair, which is the raft where they kept all the superheroes and super criminals in Civil War and beyond, where the President of the United States, the Hulk, the Red Hulk, is being kept. There's a guy who throws himself at Blade and says, please turn me into a vampire. No, go away.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny. If you haven't seen Marvel Zombies, go check it out.
Okay.
Oh, well. Why don't we take a quick break? We'll be back in a few minutes with the next episode of Blade here on the Dead TV Podcast.
And we're back. Welcome to the Dead TV Podcast. We're going to be listening to episode 1, or season 1, episode 10 or 11, depending on your list. Hunters originally aired Wednesday, August 30th, 2006. Bethany asks Shen to find her sister, who's disappeared from a waitress job in a nightclub. Now, this is an episode that features basically serial killer vampire.
Correct.
I didn't particularly care for this one. I thought it was a pretty throwaway idea. Execution of it was all right, but, you know, just the storyline itself. The entire storyline with Krista is basically she's locked in a room detoxing from the thirst for blood.
Yeah.
Blade gives her like a vial of stuff and she gets locked away and has to sweat it out, basically.
That's pretty much what you would do with an addict, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what they do in the rehab centers, I've been told. They let them sweat it out for the first 24 hours. And then they start the rehabilitation because they gotta get them cold turkey pretty fast, right?
Well, it depends on the drug itself, because some medications or just like alcohol, you can't really just cold turkey someone off of that because the body will have such an adverse reaction that it will die.
Oh, okay. All right.
Sometimes you do have to just, it's like weaning them off of it.
All right. Hold on a second. I got to go free somebody from a cold storage room that I stuck them in. I thought it was supposed to be cold storage. That didn't actually happen. I didn't do that. I don't know what I'm doing when it guards that. But you're right about what you said previously about how these seem to be nightclub scenes in both episodes. It's very damn funny. We have somebody else trying to pick up somebody at a bar, male picking up a female. I'd like to know who this girl is in the beginning. I actually have the episode in front of me while the guy's like, you know, talking to her. Do we know who this young girl is with the rather unique hairstyle?
I believe that's Jennifer, played by Melanie Papalia.
Did better with that one than I did.
Yeah, I think it's Melanie Papalia. And she was on Suits in 4 episodes as Amy. A show called You, Me, Her as Nina Martone from 2016 and 2020. So she was in a lot of episodes, 50 episodes of that. And recently, she's on a TV series called Allegiance as Jillian Good.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Anyone else new that we might have missed in the last episode we reviewed?
Oh, last episode, Angels and Demons. There was the person who played Isabella Van Scriver.
That's right. Okay, yep, his wife.
The wife of Marcus.
Okay.
Sarah Lind. And she has been on Die My Love as Cheryl.
Uh-huh.
The assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford.
Mm-hmm.
She was in that. The Lost Daughter as Patty. lots of independent films.
You know what I'd love to have on the show is the actress Emily Hurst, who plays Charlotte. Because at this point, 2006 was 19 years ago. So she was born in 1993. She is definitely now in her at least late 20s, early 30s, right? If I do that math correctly. Mm-hmm. 1993, yeah, she'd be 32 years old at this point. But she played such a cool little girl vampire, little, you know, like Abigail. Reminds me a lot of Abigail.
Okay. Maybe we can reach out.
Maybe. Try the IMDb Pro and see if we can reach her. She hasn't done very much since 2011, though.
Now, you know, life changes.
True. She might have, like, that might have been, like, an entire childhood career for her and then kind of left it after she became an adult.
Yeah, you know.
She was probably 12 when she plays Charlotte in these episodes. She looks like she's about 12 or so. I mean, she could be younger, too, considering how the muscle lifts her up and puts her on his shoulders like a marionette doll.
That's cute.
It's a little creepy and adorable, but yes, I mean, it's very strange in all of the worst and best ways. But you know, again, the unsuspecting girl vampire is always an interesting trope. But moving on to the detox of our main character.
Yeah, Krista, she really goes through it. She's kind of hearing the voices of her dead loved ones and really going through it. But the reason I say this is kind of a throwaway episode is they could have possibly done this whole storyline with Blade and Krista detoxing. That could have been slotted anywhere in the storyline. You know, this episode could have been plugged in there as like a, well, if we want the story to kind of lean this way, let's have her detox here.
No, because you have to build up the relationship between her and Van Scriber, and she had to get invested in him. This was definitely something they needed to do at the end of the season, especially after she learns his, you know, Marcus's backstory and his tragedy. That's why she's drawn to it, and that's why she sleeps with him.
But see, all that wasn't really like, you could have cut all that into her kind of flashbacks in this episode. I just don't think that there's that big of a mention of her activities with Marcus. So if they wanted her to get closer to Marcus earlier in the season, then they would play this episode right behind that, do a little editing, and there you go.
Do you think so?
I think so.
All right.
That's how it seemed to me. It felt on all regards that this was a side quest episode, and that, yeah, you could taken this episode, plop it around, a little bit of editing and some plot points that are relevant, and there you go. And that this episode could be anywhere.
I definitely think this was like a spirit quest episode. We every show, every supernatural kind of show like this, definitely feels like has like a spirit quest to it, don't you think?
Well, she's going through it. You know, she's going through the addiction, and that is a quest. It's a journey. It's an inner turmoil that you have to solve by the end of the episode.
But it's always like the good guy, our main cast of characters, gangs up on our hero to set them right. You know, it's like it was done on Supernatural. It was done Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It was done on Xena. You know, I'm just really like picking it out of the walls. They probably have done it on something Star Trek related for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's an intervention. It's your friends all getting together and they're like, you're not on the right path. Here you go. We're going to force you to do this. And usually in media, it turns out that this is what's best for them anyway. Very rarely do we show like an intervention scene where it's absolutely the worst thing that the character can do is to listen to all their friends and family. That's just not the typical storylines.
Blade lets her out. And then all's well that ends well for them, it seems. Back to normal.
Pretty much. You know, the main serial killer plot line of this episode is about a vampire or maybe a bloodline of vampires that have a series of familiars through time that he gets his jollies by torturing and mutilating and, you know, ripping up to pieces living people, and upon which he does dine, and he has been doing this for at least 200 years. And so he is called the White Prince, what he calls himself. And that is played by Scott Hendel.
And also, we should also point out, what does Chase give to Charlotte as a gift?
One of Blade's broken blades.
The one from the episode with his gang. It appears.
Yeah, broken blade.
Why would she from want that?
With the promise that she could kill Blade. Which, like, no one's done it so far, so that's a pretty high promise.
And unfortunately, because this is the second to last episode of the show, no one's going to get a chance to do it. Because we never got any resolution with the show. But we do have a great interview with the actor who plays Marcus coming up, which was a lot of fun. He was a delight to
it
talk
really
to.
Was.
Oh my god, yes. Very handsome, too. Just
so the actor that's playing our big bad villain for this episode, Scott Hendel, I'm not sure I can pronounce that name.
That's fine.
He was actually in Blade Trinity as Gedge.
Which one was that?
Blade Trinity.
No. I know Blade Trinity, but which character in Blade Trinity was Gidge?
I do not know that.
Okay, yeah, that...
I'm just reading it off of IMDb. Give me a break. I didn't watch all the movies in preparation for this.
Oh, you should have. How dare you?
No, we were going to do it in different order. Okay.
No, that's the other TV series we're doing next. For the first time, we're not going to watch the movie ahead. We're going to be watching the movie afterwards and doing a review of it.
All right.
Because after this episode, we're going to be doing Mr. Zeneca's with no guests. We tried. Unfortunately, the show is too heavily tied to the Walt Disney Corporation, Netflix, and a lot of rights and things like that. And people can't talk about things.
No one can talk.
I don't know what it is. You got fired from a job. You should be allowed to talk about it. I mean, trust me, there's projects in Hollywood that are out in theaters that directors are able to come out right after the film releases and goes, oh, let me tell you something about this thing. You know what I mean? And you can't tell me they're not still on some NDA like these guys are. I don't get it, but whatever. I do run into a guy who worked on a lot of Jim Henson's productions in the 80s and 90s. Bill something another. He was also the designer of the Gertrude plant from Little Shop of Horrors from the Rick Moranis movie.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, I'm going to see if he worked on this as well and see if we can talk to him. If not, then again, we just don't have a guest for this one. We do have one other guest ready for Blade. I'm going to be emailing them one last time to find out if they can do it and have them on the show, and maybe we can interview them by the time we record the next episode, because we're going to have one more episode left. So, and that episode will play alongside Neil's interview. But we're going to cover the TV show Dark Crystal that was on Netflix for a single season. And
Age of Resistance.
And then what we'll do next, we don't know. That'll probably take us until the end of the year anyway.
Yeah. And it's such a beautiful show. Like,
to
review it.
I'm going into this completely blind. I have never seen this before. I don't know anything about it. I know Dark Crystal, but I haven't seen Dark Crystal since I was a kid. Zeneca, did you pick up the Dark Crystal soundtrack that was on sale on La 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 Records?
I have picked up as much Dark Crystal merch and media and properties and behind-the-scenes stuff that I am hoping to have a lot of notes that I can give some background information on the Dark Crystal's mythos, its production, and its actors.
Excellent, dude. Where can people find us?
They can find us at radiohorror.com. You can hear the Dead TV podcast on anywhere that you can listen to your podcasts, including Audible and Stitcher. You can find me on elegantlykinky.com or on Instagram under elegantlykinky. And Dr. Chris, they can find you at where?
My radio show Sunday nights into Monday, every week for the most part. Also other podcasts I do, like Supernatural Creatures and Lore, which is ending soon just because it's pretty much we ran out of episodes. Supernatural's coming back as a comic book, by the way, from Dynamite Entertainment. You can also find me over on my vampire show, which will never run out of content, by the way. The Vampire Movie Minute Podcast, where we cover every old vampire movies 5 minutes at a time. I will do that until I'm tired of talking about vampires. And I'm working on a book, by the way, supposed to be coming out next year, called Vampires in Physical Media, where I take my entire physical media library of vampire films and I write essays about each one.
Ooh.
That will be approximately over 85 films I'll be writing essays about.
Wow.
Yes.
That'd be great.
But we also talk about the physical media of it all. Like, what physical media has it been released on? Laserdisc, VHS, DVD, 4K, Blu-ray, streaming, not streaming. But also, like, what bonus contents are on those discs as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of a spotlight and a guide to if you want to hunt these films down. It's not hard to hunt down physical media, people. There's a lot of stores that still carry it, and it's a lot available online. It's just that the major retail stores like Target, Walmart, Best Buy, which are the only two, three I can really think of, don't seem to want to carry it much anymore. But Walmart, every Halloween, does seem to cover a lot of vampire physical media. I found Blade there recently. And there's a Blade Steelbook coming out for the original movie. So look forward to that if you're a Steelbook collector, because the Steelbook market has exploded. And the Blade TV show that we're currently covering is easily to find, $9.99. Not hard. They mass-produce this thing. But the Blade original movie is getting re-released in 4K in a Steelbook.
Nice.
Yes. Also, the original Blade scores for the first two films have been released on both CD and vinyl record.
Wonderful.
Yep. I think it's, you gotta Google it. I don't remember the name of the site, and I can't ever pronounce it correctly. Sabrina Records or something like that. I just don't have it handy to say out loud.
Okay.
So, but if you Google Blade scores on CD or vinyl, it will pop right up. They're cheap gets. They're not overly expensive, and the vinyls come with original comic book artwork on them, which is really cool. But if you go over to the Vampire Movie Minute podcast right now, we are currently covering the Blade movie. We had Brian Hill on the show. He is the writer of the Blade comic book series off and on, and he is wrapping up his run on Ultimate Black Panther as the Ultimate Universe is about to come to an end.
Oh, nice.
Yep. So thank you everyone for tuning in to the Dead TV podcast, and we'll be back in a couple weeks with more Blade, the final episode of Blade. Thank you.
Good night.